Quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move, so do the math. See how you profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/powersthatbe, netsuite.com/powersthatbe. That's netsuite.com/powersthatbe. Happy Monday, everybody, and welcome to The Powers That Be. I know it's usually Media Monday here on the pod, but today we're doing something a little different. Last week, my colleagues at Puck, along with WME and Snap, hosted a very fun soiree in Washington, kicking off the White House Correspondents' Dinner weekend. And my partner Matt Bellany and I had the pleasure of interviewing Aaron Sorkin for The Audience. It was a lively and newsy conversation that hit on media, tech, politics, film, and of course, The West Wing. And I thought it'd be perfect for today's episode of The Powers That Be. So here it is. Enjoy.
Thanks for coming out tonight. Appreciate it. Great crowd here. This guy is one of the only universally adored people in Washington, and I think it goes beyond West Wing. I'm a big fan of his, so it's a great opportunity to sit down with him tonight. And we are going to start tonight by me reading what came up when I typed these words into ChatGPT. Write an episode of The West Wing featuring Donald Trump on trial. So you can watch him cringe as I read this. The first line of dialogue from President Bartlett: Leo, Toby, what's the latest on the Trump trial? Leo McGarry: Mr. President, the trial is underway and it's grabbing headlines like wildfire. The nation is watching closely. Toby Ziegler has a line: The charges are serious, sir, but you know how Trump operates. He's a master of manipulation. President Bartlett: We can't underestimate him, but we have to ensure a free and fair trial. You like that? You're laughing.
I think it needs a little polish, but I like most writers, I struggle with writer's block. In fact, it's writer's block is pretty much my default position.
Famously, yes.
Yeah, I have sporadic periods of being able to write something. So, to be honest with you, the idea of a machine being able to write a screenplay or an episode of The West Wing sounds great to me, but I can understand why it's troubling.
But it's scary. I mean, it's got to be a little scary to see that this is where we are now. Where are we going to be in 2-3 years when maybe the dialogue doesn't suck?
Well, yeah, that's what we were talking about before. Mm-hmm. Is I don't worry about this. I worry about it getting better than this. So I'll just have to write better.
Well, I don't worry about you necessarily. I worry about people 1, 2, 3 notches below you that want to have a career as a writer.
Well, and I appreciate that. I worry about all of us.
I mean, do you see AI as a real threat, or you think it's further out there?
Well, like I said, what you just read, AI as it exists today, I'm not threatened by, but I don't know enough about AI to know if that writing can be improved. I wouldn't know what to plug into a computer to say you just got to write better than this. Of course I'm worried about that. Okay. But I'll say this. I was once at someone's house and they pointed to a painting on the wall that a machine had painted. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I don't know enough about art to tell you whether the painting was good or bad. But I can tell you that it was going to be impossible for me to feel anything looking at that painting. It could have been a museum-worthy painting, and it would have been impossible for me to feel anything knowing that a machine.
Because you knew.
That's right. And I hope that people have the same reaction to writing that machines have generated.
Interesting.
Aaron, thank you for doing this.
Sure.
Matt and I had a little prep call with your team beforehand, and we were sort of riffing on ideas of what to ask you about. And as the resident DC dork, I had to say, for this room, I have to hold it down for the West Wing nerds in the crowd. Everyone give a shout out to the West Wing. I told you.
Thank you.
I told you. That show ended in 2006. But people still love it. My question for you is, that show, watching it again lately, it's a little earnest, aspirational.
Mm-hmm.
Could that show exist today? Would you write it in this political climate? And a sub-question, it clearly would not be on a network. What streamer would you want to sell it to?
Well, you know what? By and large, in popular culture, our leaders, especially our elected leaders, by and large, have been portrayed either as Machiavellian or dolts, right? It's either House of Cards or Veep, both of which I thought were terrific shows.
Which do you like better?
it was tied. But with The West Wing, what I wanted to do was write a show about people, leaders, who were as competent and committed as the doctors and nurses on hospital shows, as the detectives on cop shows, as the lawyers on David D. Kelly show. And so that was the engine behind The West Wing. I think that people today would respond to that as much as ever. I think the part that would be tough to do today is we would get honest about fan mail back then. It was letters. The show premiered in 1999. And so much of the mail that we got would begin with, you know, either I'm a Republican or I don't agree with the political positions that your characters take, but what they appreciated was the sense of patriotism, the sense of commitment. The show, you know, romanticized public service. They appreciated the Valentine to public service that it was. I don't know that in today's climate you would get the I'm a Republican, but people. I think that they would likely see everything as an attack on what was happening right now. But the other thing, and this doesn't have anything to do with Trump, the other thing is, I don't know if you remember the pilot, the first 5 minutes of the entire series depended entirely, for instance, on the audience not being familiar with the acronym POTUS. And they weren't. It worked, the opening of the series. And my point is, we're much more familiar with the White House. It's not, taking a look behind that curtain isn't as big a deal as I think it was probably 20 odd years ago.
You obviously wrote A Few Good Men and Chicago 7 and several movies about politics and law. Like, what kind of research and reporting did you do before you wrote all of these characters? I mean, did you like move to DC and hang out with a bunch of people? Did you embed yourself on Capitol Hill, or did it just all come from your brilliant Scarsdale brain?
I am a proud graduate of Scarsdale High School. Thank you. I assure you, no, I have a Bachelor of Fine Arts degree in musical theater. None of it comes from my brain. I was able to spend a little time at the White House, spend a little time at ESPN for sports night. I wasn't able to spend any time at the 1968 Democratic Convention for Chicago 7, but I did spend time with people who were there.
Well, I mean, there's another convention in Chicago coming up. If you that might be exciting if you want to go.
There is another convention in Chicago coming up, and it might be too exciting for my taste. And I hope that students, that people who are planning on demonstrating there, and I'm all for demonstrating But I hope that they remember that Nixon just barely beat Humphrey in 1968. And it's very likely that the sight of that, of the riots in Chicago at that convention, turned some people off to Democrats. And I just hope that students especially remember, that young people especially remember, that as complicated and important as the question of the war in Gaza is, that this is an election about Trump or not Trump. And there is an existential choice there.
On the Gaza stuff, just briefly, you recently left your agency over this issue and some posts that one of the agents at CIA had done on Instagram. Why did you do that? And are you surprised that more clients didn't leave the agency over that?
Yeah, I'd rather that not happened as publicly as it did. But my agent's wonderful woman, a wonderful agent named Maha Dakhil. I'd been with her for about 6 years. And she posted something on Instagram I just didn't understand about Israel being genocidal and that people who were supporting Israel in the conflict with Hamas were genocidal, and that's me. Moreover, it's my family members, and so as I told her, there were people close to me in my family who would have been hurt if I had stayed. So very regrettably, I had to leave. As for others, you know, I'm not the only Jewish client that she has.
Some very prominent Jewish clients that stayed.
Only if you consider Steven Spielberg prominent.
Or Natalie Portman.
Yeah, I mean, these are people who are just really climbing onto the first rung of the ladder. That decision was up to them.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Calling all pop culture enthusiasts.
Are you obsessed with all things celebrity?
Do you live for the drama, the laughs, and the unexpected moments that unfold on social media?
Then you're going to want to tune in to the Comments by Celebs podcast.
Join us three times a week as we deep dive into every aspect of pop culture.
Whether it's dissecting the latest trends or just chatting about your favorite celebs, Comments by Celebs has you covered.
We have new episodes out every week. Follow and listen to Comments by Celebs on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
I worked at CNN here in Washington for 10 years. I watched the newsroom. I feel that come out 2013-ish? I feel like that was the moment, the final great moment of the power of linear television before things started moving to the smartphone. But I watched it. A lot of people in this room watched it. Do you still watch a lot of cable news? And if you recreated the newsroom today, what newsroom would you set the show in?
Okay. Yes, I do. Either in my office or at home, there'll be a muted TV with either CNN or MSNBC muted. On. I'll unmute it for things. And I appreciate, thanks for the kind words about the newsroom. It's unusual coming from someone who worked in a newsroom.
Sorry to interrupt. I do think a lot of people that I worked with in TV news liked the show, but were also like, this doesn't feel realistic to me.
Yeah.
But then again, that's a minority of the American viewership.
No, and that's fine. Listen, I write, you know, whether it's a White House or a newsroom or a sports cable show, I write very romantically and idealistically, so it's likely not going to feel realistic. But moreover, the problem with the newsroom, there was a misunderstanding between me and people who worked in newsrooms. We got off on the wrong foot, and here's why. I think, unlike The West Wing, the West Wing existed in a parallel universe. Okay, we never said what year it was or anything. I never referred to anything contemporary. I wouldn't refer to Bill Clinton. I wouldn't refer to Britney Spears. I wouldn't.
What was the fake country? There was a fake country that kept coming up.
It ended in Stan, yeah.
Yeah, something Stan.
There was also, Kumar was the Middle Eastern country. Yes. The newsroom, however, didn't exist in a parallel universe. It existed in this one. But I said it in the recent past, okay? It always took place about a year and a half or 2 years ago. Part of the way through an episode, there would be breaking news. The BP oil well explosion, the Boston Marathon bombing, capturing bin Laden. And a date would come up on the screen. And I think that because of that, because starting with the pilot, because the show was set in the recent past, and because of the fact that I tend to, my style is romantic and idealistic, it felt like, to people who work in the news, like I was trying to show the pros how it ought to have been done. that you guys, screwed it up. Here's how, in an idealized world, it would have worked. When that's not the reason, I wasn't trying to do that at all. I'm not capable of doing it, and I wouldn't have wanted to. The reason I said it in the recent past, as opposed to a parallel universe, was I didn't want to invent the news. I didn't feel like it would be real if suddenly Luxembourg invaded Japan. And that was a story they were covering. I wanted it to be real news. And so I think I offended journalists.
Well, I will say my normie friends loved the show. It was only my journalist friends.
Please thank
who
your
aired
show.
Their criticisms.
Thank your normie friends.
Melanie liked the show.
I'm not in TV news, but I like the show.
I appreciate that.
Thanks. And the morning show stole the entire conceit of the recent past.
Yeah, we had a lot more money to spend.
So you watch a lot of cable news.
Yeah.
What has the news media, in particular the television news media, learned and not learned about covering Donald Trump this campaign?
Well, again, I honestly wouldn't want to tell experienced professionals.
But you're a consumer. You're a smart consumer, and you've written about this.
Okay, I'll tell you what I see. And when you talk about the news media, you know, you're talking about a giant. No longer are we talking about the evening news and the New York Times.
But I'll give you an example. They show a Trump speech now. You look on CNN, there is a fact check panel right afterwards.
I was going to say, clearly an effort is being made to not repeat the mistakes of 2016 and 2020.
Mm-hmm.
That you don't have to cover every move he makes, that you should fact check statements that he's making. I appreciate that anytime there is a story about the 2020 election and Trump or a Trump acolyte saying that it was stolen, it was rigged, that, you know, CNN isn't saying allegedly. They're saying that's not true. That's a lie. It wasn't.
Yeah. And I'm trying to trace this back to something that you have written about, which is Facebook and the algorithm and the fact that we are all now in our own news ecosystem. That, in many ways, can be traced back to the stuff that was going on at Facebook in the mid-2000s, late 2000s, that you did write about. How much of a role do you think Facebook and the other social media companies should play in responsibly moderating our news media and thus our democracy?
Except for Snap, which does responsibly moderate news content. But other
Except
than Snap,
for Snap,
go on.
Sure.
Just what you just saw me do.
Yeah.
was glance over at Jody Oriel, who is my publicist. I was asking permission. She went.
Oh, that means yes. That actually means yes.
Look, yeah, I'll be writing about this. I blame Facebook for January 6th.
You do?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, yeah. But explain why.
You're going to need to buy a movie ticket.
Oh, you're going to write a movie about this?
I'm trying.
Oh.
An Aaron Sorkin. That's news. An Aaaron Sorkin January 6th movie.
I'm so sorry.
The ASO, is this, he's not looking at his publicist, screaming at her, silently screaming at her.
Wait, who's going to play the QAnon shaman? Have you cast that role yet?
Are you volunteering?
Facebook has been, among other things, tuning its algorithm and tuning its algorithm to promote the most divisive material possible, because that is what will increase engagement. That is what will get you to what they call inside the hallways of Facebook, the infinite scroll.
But whose responsibility is that?
Mark Zuckerberg.
You think so? You think if Mark Zuckerberg stopped it tomorrow, that all the problems in this country would go away?
There is supposed to be a constant tension at Facebook between growth and integrity. There isn't. It's just growth. So if Mark Zuckerberg woke up tomorrow morning and realized that there is nothing you can buy for $120 billion that you can't buy for $119 billion, so how about if I make a little bit less money, I will tune up integrity, tune down growth. Yes, he can do that by honestly switching a one to a zero and a zero to a one.
Have you in the last 10 or 12 years had a conversation with Zuckerberg?
Only through the op-ed pages of the New York Times.
As one does. Yeah, as one does. Do I even dare ask about TikTok?
Oh, you know, that's a different thing. Listen, I have a, I think it's all terrible.
Mm-hmm. But that's just a waste of time, terrible? Or that's just our data being mined and used against
us? Yeah, that's a waste of time, terrible. It's a deterioration of character and standards. I'm not blaming TikTok for January 6th or for the election of Donald Trump.
But what about the notion that young people increasingly have views that might be, you know, whether they are on one side of the war in Gaza or slightly different views about Russia or China, tracing that to some of the content that is promoted to them?
It is hugely, hugely influential, and a foreign-owned company can tweak the algorithm to influence Americans.
I'm sure that if I learned more about TikTok, I would blame them more.
Yeah. You're just talking dance videos and things like that.
Yeah. One possible antidote for all of this is if we took the teaching of civics seriously in public schools. I recognize that there are only so many hours in a day and only so much money. But what if there was less phys ed and those hours were filled with seriously teaching kids? There is no excuse for an adult American to think that it's possible to redo an election or to install somebody as president of the United States. No excuse for it. Mm-hmm.
Aaron, can I get an Aaron Sorkin anxiety check on Joe Biden and his reelection chances and how worried you are?
I'm as worried as can be. You know, I don't know anything anybody else doesn't know. To me, it's chicken or fish. It's Trump or not Trump.
Which one is chicken?
So I wish that young people in particular would understand that
the choice.
Yeah, that the choice is that stark and that serious.
Why do you think they don't understand that compared to the last election?
Just looking at polls, where, for instance, I think that Biden is doing in the last poll about 10 points less well than Obama was doing with young people. I'm not sure how young people are defined in that poll.
We were chatting right before this about what I think is kind of a particularly LA phenomenon, which is Robert F. Kennedy Jr. We live in Venice. You know, RFK Jr. would be president of Erewhon. Like, you see RFK Jr. bumper stickers everywhere. You got the little bit of the anti-vax crowd. He knows celebrities. He's in LA. Have you ever encountered this guy out in the wild? What do you think of him? Tell me what he's like.
I was seated next to him when I was given an award named for his father. He was telling me about, he had just, there's an island near Puerto Rico that the Navy was using for target practice. Yes, thanks. And he and his friends and his young daughter were stationed in boats near there. You know, in one of those, you're going to have to hit me before hit them. And that notwithstanding, he seemed like a very normal guy. I don't know what this is about. But, you know, the fact is, without Ralph Nader in 2000, it would have been President Gore, right? And without, I can't remember her name in 2016.
Jill Stein.
Thank you. Without Jill Stein, it would have been President Hillary Clinton. These third-party candidates do make a difference. Now, I am slightly heartened by polls that say he's taking more votes away from Trump than Biden, but I don't know. I don't know. Also, the polling notwithstanding, nobody should be telling anybody not to take the vaccine.
Yeah, agree.
So just to back a little bit to the work, you tend to be drawn towards these very influential, disruptive, important people, Lucille Ball, Mark Zuckerberg, Steve Jobs. What is your interest level in Elon Musk?
That's a funny question. It's just because I had done the adaptation of Walter Isaacson's book about Steve Jobs. Mm-hmm. And so they came back to me with the Elon Musk book. And I wasn't interested.
Why not?
I'm not sure. I think partly because there was no chance that I was going to be able to understand any of it, I think.
You don't understand him as a person? You don't understand his decision-making? You don't understand why he is where he is? What is it about him?
No. It's not all of that. Even if I couldn't understand it, I could probably make it up. I don't think I would be able to understand, just like with when I did Steve Jobs. I told Sony, listen, we're going to need to hire a consultant of some kind because it takes me 5 minutes in the morning to find the power button on my computer. I don't know. I'm not going to be able to dramatize how the computer was invented. They hired Steve Wozniak to be the consultant.
To help you.
Yeah. And I don't know if anyone has ever had a conversation with Steve Wozniak. You can't understand a word that he's saying. Like, I would ask him about the power cord on the original Mac, and he would go on and on about circuits, about electrical circuits.
That's your fault for asking him.
And
that.
I just knew that I wasn't going to be able to. It was going to take somebody with like an advanced mathematics degree or more advanced than what I've got to understand Elon Musk.
I feel like we're about to wrap up here, so I want to do what they call a soft landing.
Okay.
You know that term from the newsroom, probably. A little bit of a crossover question, because Matt's podcast is distributed by The Ringer. Bill Simmons loves to do casting what-ifs on the rewatchables. If you were doing The West Wing today, who would be President Josiah Bartlett?
If Martin Sheen wasn't available?
If Martin Sheen's unavailable.
Okay. there are a number of people. I had said a couple of years ago that Sterling K. Brown was somebody I'd have liked.
Yeah. Very earnest.
Yeah. being earnest isn't a requirement.
No, but in the model of the original.
I provide that. It's funny because no matter what, whether it's the West Wing or anything else, I always, I have to kind of give the actors a tutorial that because my writing in the course of, especially if it's a play or a movie, if it's 2 hours long, through the course of it, it's going to flirt with melodrama. Okay, it's going to, there are going to be periods when it's just going to walk right up to melodrama and introduce itself. And so I need the actors to not lean into that, okay? I need them to go in the other direction, simplify it. When you feel like the language is melodramatic, just simplify it, keep it from going over the cliff.
Who else is good at that?
I have worked with a number of actors who are good at that, and it's interesting. I had a play on Broadway a couple of years ago. It was a stage adaptation of To Kill a Mockingbird.
I saw it. It was very good.
Well, thanks a lot. You know, but it ran for a while, so we went through a number of different casts. And the difference between the actors who knew not to lean into it and the actors who felt like what the audience really wanted to see was them crying on stage was huge.
Matt, would you like to finish by asking about Barbie or Oppenheimer?
No.
Okay.
No, I'm okay.
I love both those movies.
Yeah, they're both good, right?
Both great.
Yeah.
They're both great. I think they didn't come a moment too soon. You know, going to the movies is so much fun.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very
thank
much.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks a lot.
Aaron,
appreciate it.
Yeah. You bet.
Appreciate it.
Take care. Thanks a lot.
Thanks so much for listening to another episode of The Powers That Be. As a reminder, The Powers That Be is the official podcast of Puck. We'd like to thank Ben Landy, Liz Goff, and Alex Bigler for their editorial and production guidance. If you like what you hear, please share with a friend. It really helps us keep delivering the inside scoop that only Puck can offer. Follow us on Twitter at Puck News. I'm Ben Landy. See you tomorrow. This has been a presentation of Odyssey. Please listen, rate, review, and follow all episodes wherever you get your podcasts. The Powers That Be Daily is executive produced by John Kelly, co-founder of Puck, Bob Tabador, and Ben Landy, executive editor at Puck.